I Hate Politics is a podcast about a human activity we love to hate. I am Sunil Dasgupta. Between Christmas and the New Year, a dive into a pool you may not know exists. Regional electricity governance. The vast network of electricity distribution organized by groups of U.S. states to plan, coordinate, and monitor electricity supply across the land. These are called Regional Transmission Organizations, RTOs. The modern version of the RTO came into existence in the 1990s when the United States sought to deregulate electricity following the deregulation in the 1980s of trucking, telecoms, and airlines. But things are not going as expected. In Maryland and other states, electricity rates for consumers is set to go up high, significantly so. And if things are not righted, they could continue to rise further. I asked Maryland Delegate Lorik Cherkudian and West Virginia Delegate Evan Hansen to break down one of the most complex areas of public policy there is. You think housing and education are complicated? Wait till you meet electricity regulations. To give you a leg up, here is some background. Prior to deregulation, power in the United States was vertically integrated. That is, a utility company generated, transmitted, and distributed to homes electric power within one corporate entity. Neighboring utilities routinely made power-sharing agreements to ensure reliable service, building the first interstate electric grids. The scale and scope of federal projects like the Tennessee Valley Authority further required interstate regional power sharing. In 1927, Pennsylvania and New Jersey executed a power pooling agreement, which Maryland eventually joined, creating PJM interconnection for Pennsylvania, Jersey, and Maryland. PJM, as a regional transmission organization, would eventually cover 13 states all the way west to Illinois, including Indiana, Ohio, and Michigan, and south to Virginia and North Carolina. The deregulation drive in the 1990s under the authority of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission gave us the contemporary RTO, the Regional Transmission Organization, which is generally self-governed by an independent board made up of various stakeholders. In PJM, the majority of votes on the board are controlled by generators and utilities, while state governments, departments of energy, and the state public service commissions do not have votes. This gives elected and appointed officials practically no formal control over the workings of PJM, while being accountable to voters for developing energy and climate policies. One consequence has been delays in moving toward clean energy, but also high electricity rates being paid by consumers. In Maryland, which formally deregulated electricity in 1999 under then-Governor Paris Glendening, there have been problems with which coal-fired plants to close and how quickly, where to site new generation. The first offshore generation in Maryland just received federal approval and now awaits state approval. And where to site high-voltage transmission lines. The Maryland Piedmont Reliability Project, which connects Pennsylvania-generated nuclear energy to the data centers in Loudoun County, Virginia, through the counties of Frederick, Carroll, and Baltimore, have created local unrest. Governor Wes Moore has expressed concern about the Piedmont Reliability Project. Maryland State Regulator Fred Hoover, the chair of the Public Service Commission, on this podcast has called for greater state intervention in electricity resource planning, which, in my view, is tantamount to asking the state to roll back deregulation. And now, Delegate Lorik Cherkudian from Maryland and Delegate Evan Hansen from West Virginia have their say. Stay with us.
I Hate Politics is brought to you by UMBC's Political Science Program, where you'll learn to shape public policy, impact communities, and function at the center of modern society. Learn more at shadygrove.umbc.edu.
I Hate Politics is a podcast about our neighborhoods, workplaces, schools and streets, and our local governments as they function in diverse and democratic societies. This means Our politics are messy, dirty, sometimes corrupt, with often self-serving politicians. But no matter how much we may hate politics, we are never exempt from it, even when we refuse to participate. In fact, the purpose of politics is to keep society moving precisely when we don't agree with each other, like now. Music for this episode comes from the Washington, D.C. rock and roll band Seven Door Sedan. Glenn Kowalski on vocals and guitar, Josh Singer on bass guitar, and Norman Vandersloos on drums. You can find their newest fall 2024 singles on Bandcamp. We use two songs, Neutro and Juniper. Don't wanna decide what I'm gonna say. Can't make decisions anyway. Don't wanna choose what I'm gonna eat. There's nothing I wanna watch on my TV. And when I grow up, there's nobody I wanna be. Evan Hansen, Lorik Charkudian, welcome to I Hate Politics.
I'm thrilled to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Maryland and West Virginia are part of the same regional transmission organization called PJM Interconnection. Recently, PJM that manages electricity wholesale markets in 13 states, it includes both West Virginia and Maryland, has seen a massive increase in its wholesale electricity prices. Can you speak to the problem as you see?
Sure. And you know what? Thank you so much for doing this podcast on PJM. It's such a sort of obscure organization. Like, you're most people who care very much about what is on their electricity bill, and most people who care very much about clean energy and climate change don't know about PJM. So many of the policies that we have implemented are in some ways blocked by PJM, because the rules at PJM that determine how energy comes onto the grid, so the interconnection queue, which they manage, the rules at PJM about capacity, how we make sure that there's enough 3 years down the line from now, enough energy online, and the rules at PJM about transmission planning, how we know when we need new transmission lines, where we put them, those are all things that are managed outside the state, but the policies the state wants to implement are very much affected by those rules. And we don't have a vote as a state in PJM.
Evan, how do you see the problem?
The challenge in West Virginia is that our residential electricity rates have gone up faster than in any other state in the country in recent years. And that's largely because we're an outlier in terms of how we generate our electricity. It's about 90% from coal, and no other state even comes close. And West Virginia has 9 coal-fired power plants that are still active. But many of them are 50, 60 years old. They're inefficient and they can't compete in the PJM grid. It's just simply more expensive to generate electricity from coal. But due to policies at the state level and also at PJM, it's been more difficult than it should be to make the transition to more of an all-the-above energy strategy.
Just to clarify, rates in both West Virginia and Maryland are set by the Public Service Commission.
Well, sort of. What you have is the Public Service Commission approves of distribution rates. So in Maryland, they approve of the distribution rates, which is sort of a portion of the bill, but the other portion of the bill is the supply, the electricity. And so that's really where that is determined by the PJM wholesale market. Even the distribution side of the bill is affected by transmission that gets built. And so all of that is really driven by the rules that PJM puts into place and how market actors respond to those rules. So the PSC approves of and oversees the SOS auction, the standard offer service auction, but what's available within that auction is very much. So they make sure that within that auction, it's as low as it could possibly be, but they don't control ultimately what those prices are.
What about West Virginia? How is the system different?
Well, in West Virginia, it's a vertically integrated system. So the electric utilities both generate electricity, but also oversee the transmission system and distribution system. They'll go to the State Public Service Commission with rate increase requests, and the Public Service Commission will make a determination through a whole process with experts and such about whether to grant that request in full or in part or not at all.
In the case of West Virginia, how is PJM having an impact on the high rates that you just talked about?
One is that PJM is on record as showing significant concern about whether there is or will be in the near future enough capacity to serve the projected load that's going to increase in PJM. And they have been coming to our legislature and providing testimony before the Energy Committee to basically provide ammunition to those legislative leaders who do not want to shut down a coal-fired power plant, and providing cover to them because they're making the case that every coal-fired power plant is needed due to the projected shortfall in capacity that may occur in the future. So that's one impact from PJM. Another impact is related to the interconnection queue that Lorik mentioned a few minutes ago. We did pass some legislation in 2020 and 2021 that did start to open up our energy economy to more of an all-of-the-above strategy. And back in 2020, the entire state of West Virginia had 10 megawatts of solar, which is nothing. But if you look at PJM's own numbers now, there's something like 8,000 megawatts of solar in West Virginia in the queue waiting to get approval to hook up to the grid. And the mismanagement of the queue by PJM over the last several years has had a real impact on West Virginia in terms of us diversifying our energy mix. And importantly, realizing all the jobs that come along with that, the jobs and economic investments in the state that come along with building out our renewable system.
So is it your contention that generating power using coal is more expensive than otherwise?
Yes, generating electricity from our old inefficient power plants is more expensive than generating electricity from newer natural gas-fired power plants, and more expensive than generating electricity from renewables. The technology has changed. The cost curves have gone down for the other technologies. Costs have gone up for coal.
But renewables are intermittent, as you know, and they have to be co-located sometimes with a fossil fuel plant. And so therefore, I'm just wondering how the economics works out.
The way that the PJM grid works is you don't say, we're going to either go with this plant here, this coal-fired power plant, and run it 24/7, or we're going to go with this solar field that produces electricity for 12 hours, right? At any given time, the market is taking and putting and using the energy source that is the lowest cost in that moment. We haven't talked about the advantage of an RTO, as much criticism as I have for PJM, and I have plenty, but an RTO itself, a regional transmission organization, and if you look at Southwest Power Pool, if you look at the Mid-Continental ISO, which is MISO, if you look at them, they do way better than PJM. But the idea behind an RTO is that we can share energy with our neighbors, that we can have the lowest cost electricity at any given time across the grid. And so what happens then is during periods, especially in the summer, and especially peak periods in the summer, solar energy can be the cheapest thing that is online. And so that is what is feeding the grid, unless we have these artificial rules in place like they do in West Virginia, which is requiring that the coal-fired power plants run at that time or the solar can't get on at that time. So when we talk about retiring or minimizing the use of fossil plants, it's not because we think next week before we have storage online, we think that next week we're just going to have solar and wind, right? There's no one who actually believes that that's going to happen right away. But what we're saying is the more we put of renewables, the more hours of the day those renewables are online and are producing the cheapest and the cleanest electricity. So if you look, for example, at Southwest Power Pool, there's been periods of time there where 90% of the electricity that's being generated across the entire Southwest is renewables because they have a lot of renewables online. Now, they also have gas plants online. So at night, it's more likely if it's night in the summer, so the wind is slower, you know, you may be using those gas plants. But the system is designed with enough renewables, not yet ready to wipe out all the fossil, but enough renewables online that at any given time, those are the cheapest. And that's what's being called on to produce the electricity.
And to add to that, just looking at PJM's own numbers, earlier this year there was 53,000 megawatts of storage in the PJM queue.
Yeah, it could be here. If we didn't have the PJM queue, it would be here now.
So it's not accurate to say that storage is just sort of a, you know, something that's going to happen long in the future. The cost curve on storage has gone down tremendously.
And it seems like the central problem then is the queuing.
That has been the battle I've been fighting with them for 6 years. Their rules around retirements and reliability must run. I've been fighting that battle for a couple of years, and transfer of interconnection rights related to the queue. It's transmission planning, which they do a terrible job of. And so as a result, they're always doing emergency slapshot crisis transmission planning instead of long-term planning. That's why we have Piedmont. And it's the rules of their capacity market that favor fossil fuels over battery storage and renewables.
Okay. I'll get into each one of these things, mm-hmm. but I do want to understand what is so special about PJM as an RTO that it cannot function the same as the other examples from the Southwest or wherever you were bringing up. What on earth is the difference in the governance model?
It's a great question. So here's what's important to know about PJM. It is a nonprofit organization that is a membership organization, and the members get to decide about the rules. And the governance model is very different from places like MISO and Southwest Power Pool, which came about after PJM and learned from PJM's mistakes and built processes that actually have more influence for the governments of the states in those areas. So in PJM, the members are generators, right? Primarily fossil generators, and they are transmission owners, which is the incumbent utilities. The vast majority of the members fall into those two categories. Now, the state does not have a vote. The Public Service Commission does not have a vote. The only place that anyone resembling an elected appointed official from the state of Maryland actually has a vote in all of that is that the Office of People's Counsel has one vote in a larger user, putting my hand in quotes, the user category at PJM, which is where Google and Microsoft and the big manufacturers all are mixed in. And so what happens is when we start talking about the PJM interconnection queue, the transmission rules, the RMR rules, the capacity auction rules, you find that every single one of them, lo and behold, happens to benefit the fossil fuel industry and incumbent utilities and transmission owners. And then when you work backwards, you see those are the people who are making the rules. That is what that governance structure is.
The other RTOs are also membership organizations. Mm-hmm. They also function more or less the same way. In terms of votes alone, if that is your argument, do the state governments in those other RTOs, do they have majority voting?
So it's not as simple as who has the majority. There's a lot more in the details of how decisions get made. This is an example, I think. In PJM, they have a lot of sort of quote unquote stakeholder processes. So they talk about it as an inclusive process, which theoretically it could be, except there are 400 meetings a year where these decisions are getting made, and they are not public. They're broadcast live, but they're not recorded. The votes aren't public. You can't go back and see them. You can't see the minutes, right? So it's all very secretive, and we've been pushing to get these to be made public, to be recorded, to have public minutes. that's one of the pieces of legislation that Evan and I have been working on. And they'll say, well, you can come and listen to any one of those. Well, who has the time and the money to do that?
What about transparency rules in the other RTOs?
Yes, they're way more transparent.
How so?
Well, more public in the meetings, in the voting.
Are the minutes recorded? Are the votes recorded?
I think the problem is it's not even close to apples to apples. It's a totally different governance structure. And so it's not like I can say there's 400 meetings in PJM, there's 200 over here, they're transparent here, they're not transparent.
Is it the case that in West Virginia, Evan, that the political preference for keeping coal alive, is that's what's driving, and PJM is playing a more supporting role as opposed to in Maryland where, you know, because of deregulation, it's a different problem?
PJM is playing a supporting role in providing ammunition to those who want to keep every coal-fired power plant operating as long as possible. I think that's the fundamental problem with why the rates have gone up so much in recent years, is a reliance on coal to an extent that even if it's not economical.
West Virginia electricity rates are up because coal-fired plants are being kept on running. In contrast, in Maryland, rates are up is because there is a move to retire coal-fired plants, but they have to push it back and there's not enough generation, according to PJM.
So in order for new generation to come online, whether that's a 1,500 megawatt gas plant, a 500 megawatt solar array, PJM has to do a study of the transmission grid and say, like, okay, if you want to come online in X location, let's see what the transmission is like there. And let's see if there's transmission upgrades that are necessary for you to connect from that particular field into the transmission grid. The problem is that in PJM, they have gotten so far behind that it was a 6-year wait, a 7-year wait. And finally, they had to close the queue so that no new company could come in and try to put new generation online. So there's projects that in 2019, they said, I could build solar and storage here. And they went and they applied. They still haven't gotten out of that queue. They're still waiting for that study to be completed. Most of what's in the queue is renewables, because most of what's trying to come online right now is renewables. There's enough in the queue, solar and storage, that we could take care of all of PJM's generation challenges. So meanwhile, we have plants that are set to retire. Brandon Shores is set to retire because of economics. So not because of any state policy, not because of anything else other than the economics of coal. We've been watching Brandon Shores. We've been talking about Brandon Shores. I was working on a bill back in 2020, and I was talking about Brandon Shores is going to retire. I'm going to PJM and I'm saying, look, we can see that Brandon Shores is going to retire. Can we talk about a transfer of those interconnection rights? You already know that you can put in 1,200 megawatts at that site because you've been putting that in. Brandon Shores is putting that in. We know it's closing. Let's talk about transferring those rights. Let's talk about, could we put solar and storage in that location as soon as they close? PJM said, no, 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 no one will jump the queue. That would be jumping the queue. There'll be no transfer of interconnection rights. And besides, they haven't even told us they're retiring yet, but everyone can see they're retiring, right? Everyone can see the writing on the wall. PJM's rule is you don't have to tell us you're retiring until 3 months before you're going to retire. Okay, so we all know Brandon Shores is retiring. We're talking to PJM. We're begging them to change the rules. All the other replacement generation is stuck in the queue. Finally, Brandon Shores says, we're going to retire in 3 months. PJM says, oh, you can't do that. There'll be reliability problems. Well, no kidding. Who knew? All of us who have been talking about it for 5 years knew that that was coming and we're trying to work on another kind of a solution. But the rules are Talen doesn't have to tell PJM until 3 months before they're going to retire. And when they tell them, if PJM says, oh, we're going to have a reliability issue, we need to build more transmission, which they're doing, in the meantime, in the 3 or 4 years it takes us to build that transmission, Brandon Shores gets to name their price. We need you to stay online in case of capacity issues, in case of peak periods. You can tell us what your price is and we'll pay it to you. Anything you want, right? And so now we're going to pay $250 million a year to Talen for a coal plant that we already know should be closed, that for 5 years we tried to build another solution and PJM wouldn't accept, to stay online while new transmission is being built, $800 million in new transmission, by the way, BGE is building. All of that could have been avoided if PJM had an interconnection queue that worked and if they had a different rule other than RMR, and if they allowed for the transfer of interconnection rights.
The similarity is that the old coal plants that are nearing their retirement can't compete. So, but it's a very different situation, and that in Maryland, the plant, the owners of the plant announced that they were going to retire the plant, but in West Virginia, that's not politically feasible. And so, in fact, the opposite is happening. They're being told to keep running their plants, even if they are not economical. But so while things play out a little bit differently, I think the common thread is that you have these old coal plants that are nearing retirement. And if you do keep them open longer than they should, it's the ratepayers who are footing the bill, paying extra.
Is it the case that power consumption is at a steady state in the state, or is it going up? Are you getting data centers?
You know, there's talk about data centers coming to every state, and there's a lot of talk about that, but where they actually end up and whether there's actually double counting going on in terms of these load projections in different states. The tech companies that are building out data centers over the next 5, 10, 15 years are coming to many different states and trying to figure out where the best sites are to build these, and potentially trying to get deals with incentives to site in different locations. And so they're talking to different states and different within those different states, you have the utilities commissions and the utilities that are thinking about new load projections, new projections for how much electricity is going to be needed in all these different service territories. But the question is whether or not these projections are counting the same data centers within each of their own service.
So you think the demand is inflated?
I think there's a good chance that it's not going to show up everywhere. These data centers, they're going to show up in certain locations, and other locations are going to say thanks, but no thanks, we're going to go over here instead.
Seems to me is that deregulation happened without fixing the governance mechanisms within PJM.
That's exactly right.
So if we are to go now and fix the board, the federal government could act. But what is in the hands of states to do at this point?
There's very little in the hands of states. Let me start with that. But I want to sort of lay out the three sort of pathways that I think theoretically exist. So the first thing is that officially, PJM says that they are neutral on policy. They are policy takers, not policy makers. The reality is they have the high-paid lobbyists running around Annapolis doing something, running around all of the state capitals doing something. And I see what they're doing. And they're fighting my bills that are creating alternatives to RMR and my bills that are creating more transparency and all of that kind of thing. So in theory, they try to operate taking into account reliability, which is their primary goal, and then also state policies. It has not been my experience that they do that, but that's what they say they do. And so it's important that state policies articulate clearly exactly what it is that they believe.
In the case of West Virginia, they are actually following state policy. You don't want that state policy, I agree. In Maryland, you're saying they're not.
Well, they're also influencing state policy. I've watched the PJM executives in front of West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania lawmakers where they disparage states with clean energy goals, and they talk about the importance of keeping on fossil plants for as long as possible.
I think that's exactly correct. And, you know, West Virginia has had a little bit of a schizophrenic energy policy over the last 5 years, depending on how big the majority has been in the legislature. But we did take some baby steps toward more of an all of the above strategy, but there's been a backlash against that in the last year or two, and PJM's testimony before our committees has helped with that backlash.
And then this is where it gets a little tricky. So FERC Order 1920, which is a transmission planning rule, further reinforces this idea. And if you were to just look at FERC Order 1920, you would say, okay, let's all write down what our goals are in terms of transmission, because FERC Order 1920 clearly says to the RTOs, you need to consider state policy in your transmission planning. So, you know, I have a bill coming up that clearly articulates what the policy is relates to offshore wind and transmission. We should write it down. We should put it in our legislation. It's worth noting, however, that PJM is fighting for Order 1920. They asked for a rehearing. It was rejected. And now they're challenging it in court. So here you have FERC, who technically does regulate the RTOs, and FERC and PJM pushes back on Order 1920, on Order 2023, which was supposed to fix the interconnection queue. Every time FERC orders them to fix something that's broken, they push back.
Those orders are applicable across all RTOs.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is every RTO against up in arms? So why is it that PJM can be up in arms, but the others cannot be? I mean, I really don't understand this sort of absolutely fundamental problem. Yes,
I know. I know, me neither. They think they're special. I don't know what to tell you. You should bring them on here. Maybe they can explain themselves.
Maybe after this.
Yes. I'd like to be on at the same time if I could. The second thing that states can do and should do is to continue to publicly call on PJM to fix all of these messes. So you recently had the governors of several states. I know that Maryland governor, Pennsylvania governor, a couple other governors, Illinois, I think, have sent several letters to PJM. I now have record of, 5 years of asking them to change their interconnection, 5 years of asking them to change capacity markets, 5 years of asking them to have an alternative to RMR. So we're on the record calling for all of that. And now they're very, very slowly considering a few of those things. The third area that I was just going to highlight at PJM, there's all these lower level committees, and then there's four upper level committees, and then there's the board of directors. And the four upper level committees, all of those minutes and votes are public. You can see who, what company voted what way. So you can see Talon voted for this, and you can see, Exelon voted for that. At the lower level, though, which is the more important level, because it is the level that decides what does and doesn't even get to have a vote at those higher levels. So the lower level, these are the votes that are not public. They're not recorded, and we don't know how anyone voted. After a little bit of time asking PJM to make these public, we said, well, we regulate the utilities, and the utilities have major number of votes on these. But we don't regulate in Maryland. We don't regulate the generation owners, right? Talon and Constellation, but we do regulate BGE, Exelon, First Energy. And so as a result, we can require them to disclose their votes to the Public Service Commission because they have a franchise that's supposed to be in the public interest. And so we will require that they disclose their votes to the Public Service Commission. And what that'll give us, it's a step in transparency. So it doesn't solve our problems, but because they would have to disclose their vote, it'll tell us what votes are being taken. So we still won't know, for example, how Talon voted at a particular meeting, but we'll know how Exelon voted. We'll know how each of Exelon's subsidiaries, of which there are many. What this bill does is it requires that disclosure. This bill has now not passed in Maryland 2 years in a row. The utilities fight it tooth and nail. PJM fights it quietly in Maryland, publicly in Pennsylvania, where it was introduced. We've got it introduced in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Virginia, and next year we'll have others as well. The level of opposition to this has made me feel like maybe this is way more important than I ever imagined, because to fight it as hard as they have fought it means that someone somewhere is really interested in hiding something.
Lori, speaking from your experience, it's not like PJM itself blocks things, right? PJM blocks things because your colleagues in the legislature agree with PJM to block things.
Yes. Well, so the transparency bill passed out of the House last year and the year before. It passed out of the House and the Senate in different formats this year. And so it passed late and wasn't able to be reconciled in the final days.
Is there any way states can influence the prioritization in the interconnection queue? Or is that completely out of state control?
The only possible path, and I'm not sure that this is going to work out, but in theory, right now, PJM is going through a stakeholder process, what they're calling their reliability resource initiative. It's a little bit controversial, honestly, because there's a lot of people who are in the queue that are like, well, if you just let us get through the queue, we'll solve the reliability issue. there's some people who think that maybe it's a way for them to just move gas plants online more quickly based on the rules, the straw man that they proposed. But in theory, what it does is it would allow some resources to come on more quickly than going through the entire queue. And it would be based on a couple different criteria. In particular, I think it would be based on the locational need for that, right? So there are certain places that are more constrained where that reliability resource would be more valuable than other places where it would be helpful to have it online, but not a constrained zone, and so not as crucial, right? And so in theory, they could structure the Reliability Resource Initiative to include, among whatever other criteria they have, they could include state policy.
Now, it seems to me that there is a collective action failure among the 13 states that make up PJM. Now, I understand that some are Republican, West Virginia for one, Ohio is the other, Indiana is a third. But, you know, if you had Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, Illinois, perhaps Michigan, that's a huge part of the market. And I would imagine if you got true collective action from those states, that PJM would have to turn around.
That's been the crux of the organizing that we have been doing, Evan and I have been doing with NCEL, is trying to educate our colleagues in all the states who care about energy issues.
My fear is that it'll be too little too slow.
Yeah, I mean, mine too, on everything related to climate and economic justice.
I would agree with what Lurie said. You know, there's different people in office now than there were 5-10 years ago, and we're doing the best we can. It is a political problem, but it's also a technical challenge. And once the queue got so large, it simply takes time to address the queue. Again, that doesn't help in terms of, say, achieving pollutant reductions and climate goals.
You know, climate goals is one thing, but right now I think it's electric bill. If crisis is a way we solve problems, then we are in crisis.
Yeah, we are. Sure. I agree.
A couple of years ago, I had a bill that contemplated actually leaving the capacity market altogether. It's a little bit complicated to do that. For technical reasons, we potentially would go from PJM as a problem to a constrained zone where one generator constellation would have had market power in the BG&E constrained zone. Even if we had succeeded in exiting the capacity market and using a fixed resource requirement, which was what we were exploring at the time, we still would have been stuck with all of their interconnection backlog. And so the new stuff wasn't going to come online. There's not a way around the interconnection queue, except I'll tell you what the way around the interconnection queue is: put more distributed resources online. And so I have a bill this year, actually, to put more distributed solar, distributed storage, like all the stuff we can do, is put stuff on the distribution grid, because that doesn't have to go through PJM's interconnection queue.
I feel like I'm in a headlock. Lorik Cherkuti and Evan Glass, thank you for taking the time to try to pry me out.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
What lessons can we draw from my conversation with Maryland Delegate Lorik Cherkuti and West Virginia Delegate Evan Hansen? First, told you, electricity policy is complicated, like being in a headlock sometimes. We may not want to think about PJM, but it is time to focus on it. Second, while deregulation may have brought cost advantages, they have also brought cost disadvantages. These numbers are calculated by researchers, but after looking at a lot of them, honestly, I don't know if deregulation has been successful. We know for sure that undoing the current market system may well be near impossible, simply transferring market power from one entity to another. But West Virginia, despite its deleterious coal policy, may actually be a small beacon of light. The state remains vertically integrated in its power sector. That is, the state is able to regulate the entire chain of generation, transmission, and distribution of electric power. Maryland simply cannot. FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which could make reforms, but that would require congressional action. And with a new administration and a new Congress, the chances of using federal action to re-regulate the power sector seems unlikely. The interconnection queue, however, seems like something that PJM could be compelled to resolve if the 13 states it serves got together. But even smaller collective action could work. PJM's interconnection queue does have some technical and money challenges. Interconnections sometimes need new transmission lines that are hard to build because they need money and space. Perhaps states may be able to help there. Again, hard to imagine given Maryland's fiscal situation right now, but certainly something to think about. Lastly, there is a strong case to include votes for participating states on PJM's governing body. That would be a big change. But will the governors take that on? That's all for this episode of I Hate Politics, where we aim to stem the decline in local news by working with community voices. Don't forget to tune in to our Tuesday morning news analysis. I Hate Politics is produced by me, Sunil Dasgupta, with support from University of Maryland, Baltimore County. I direct UMBC's political science program at the universities at Shady Grove in Montgomery County, where, among other things, we explore and learn about politics, government, and society close to home. Music for this episode comes from Washington, D.C. rock and roll band, Seven Door Sedan. Glenn Kowalski on vocals and guitar, Josh Singer on bass guitar, and Norman Vandersloos on drums. You can find their newest fall 2024 singles on Bandcamp. We use two songs, Neutral and Juniper. If you want to share your music on the show or know someone else who might want to, please email us at producer@ihppod.org. I hope you'll subscribe and share the podcast as we bring you stories about politics close to you and to your home. See you next time.